Thank you very much for raising the issue of the Animal Centre in Letterkenny. Please keep highlighting it. It's not too late for you to get pressure on to ensure that the centre is offered to a local rescue. It's also crucial that you get an answer with regards to how this merger will affect legacies and bequests. Now, I don't know what the story is in that regard, to be honest with you, and we will keep on it. I'm only getting my head around the story in its entirety now, because it was covered when I was away, and the bits and bobs of information, it just wasn't clear to me. I have a clear understanding of it now, and we'll be able to pursue that moving forward. The Animal Centre is closing down in Ballyar. I'm devastated to hear this. Denise, the manager, has put an immense amount of work in over the years. I'm just devastated, and all the volunteering and work has gone in will stop. That comes in from Grace Gallagher. So it is going to be raised in the not too distant future, we're being told. Right, in studio with me now, Paul McLaughlin of Balagdur Garden Centre. Paul, how are you?
Not so bad, Greg.
Good to have you in. Any crack?
No, not very much. It just took me about 10 minutes to get in here because it was the big shower right there. I couldn't even get out of the car.
Brutal, isn't it? But probably much needed, this deluge.
Yes, absolutely. I do no harm. Once it knows when to stop now, it'll be happy enough.
Everyone wants it to stop at a different time. No one wanted it to start, or some did want it to start. It's just a funny old one here. Right, what have you brought in with you?
I brought a few bulbs there. So I have now is perfect time for spring bulbs.
So it is. Galanthus?
Galanthus, yes, snowdrops.
What shall I do with them? Where do I plant these?
Plant them in your garden or in a pot even.
Even now?
Yeah, pretty much now, and they'll come up sort of January, February time.
So you won't see any shoots? For
about Christmas time, right? Okay. You should start seeing shoots. But I brought a few different things there. They're the two big ones everybody wants at the minute, is the snowdrops and the bluebells.
Okay, they're bluebells. So, what's the official
That's
Hispanica blue?
Hispanica blue is what they call it. They're Spanish bluebells.
Okay, pots are outdoors as well?
Pots are outdoors, exactly. Okay. Bulbs are actually great for a thing in the sense that even if you're tight forest space, they're perfect in a bulb, actually. And there's a thing called a bulb lasagna where you can actually plant loads of different layers of bulbs in a pot.
Okay.
And then they'll flower at different times. So you can have your pot going from like January right up to about April, May.
The Parrot Prince Tulipa.
Yes, actually, I brought them once because I actually see the daffodils beside you there as well.
I'm not too bothered about daffodils.
No, see, these are special daffodils.
Ooh, they've got little pink middles.
They're pink, exactly. Okay. A lot of people now are breeding away at
the
bulbs
pink
and
pride.
Stuff. So the thing about the bulbs is, you have much more colours available now than used to be. Like, used to be the yellow daffodil, basically. Now they're breeding them, so you have pink daffodils and stuff.
Same rules apply. Plant these will pop up.
Yeah.
Or, depending on the weather, start of next year.
Generally, your crocuses, snowdrops should be up January. Then once you move into March or so, you should be into your daffodils. And then April, tulips, then May for alliums. So you have a right up to the first.
Are you
half
taking
of the year.
These away with you again?
No. You can have them or you can distribute them.
No, I can't distribute them.
No.
So I just plant these.
Plant them.
How deep?
Generally, rule of thumb with a bulb is the depth of the bulb, you plant it twice as deep.
Okay.
So you do, or actually, two depths of the bulb and then you plant the bulb. So daffodils, obviously a bigger bulb, so he goes a wee bit deeper.
What kind of ground do they need to go into?
Generally, any ground's perfect as long as it's not waterlogged over the winter.
Yeah. Okay. So I know where they're going. And the reason I'm taking these is not because I'm greedy. I'm going to plant them and then we'll see what happens in the spring.
Yes. Right. The two big problems with them. One would be waterlogged soil can sort of rot them over thing. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is badgers actually are mad about them. They would dig them up if you had a badger in the area.
A lot of badgers on the side of the roads this weather.
Yes, funny, the one just above the garden tent there.
I don't know if they need to be shifted or if it's nature or what have you. But they're big bony things, you know about it if you hit one.
Funny, actually, I was saying the one line down the road there was a badger line there and there was a bit of a bumper beside it. So we'll say whoever had it knew that it.
They are solid, there's no doubt about that. Right, let's see. Shall we get into... have we touched on most of the stuff now we should be doing at this time of year? We're still in that window. Has the sort of winter bedding...
Winter bedding is available now,
all right.
So does your cyclamens, your even your pansies, that sort of stuff is all available from now. A lot of people's pots are getting a wee bit tired looking. Even a day like today with the heavy rain, we'll sort of finish them off almost, if you know what I mean. Though a lot of them are still going on quite well.
Yeah.
But if they were looking a bit dodgy, they could finish them. So.
And in terms of it, you know, take the summer stuff out, maybe reinvigorate the soil plant?
Yes.
Is that it?
Pretty much, exactly. Or if say a half of your pot is still looking grand, that's how I'd sort of supplement it now. And then as it dies off, you can sort of add in more as you go along. So may not suit everybody, but it's always an option just to keep the thing rolling on.
Yeah, and as I always point out to, you know, often people might think that this is a piece about people with massive gardens and lawns, but, you know, you could live in an upstairs apartment with a little balcony, your windowsill. You know, there's a load of places you can bring a bit of light and colour and life. You know, you don't always have to be blessed with a big back or front garden.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Even the amount of people can incorporate into a balcony, that can actually put on an amazing display. So they can't. And even for stuff like growing food, like even growing herbs or stuff, like even if you had a balcony, it's perfect. And it's always, they reckon indoors is good to have a few plants going on for just purifying air and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I think so. And I think it either consciously or subconsciously lifts or can lift the mood. We're going to get, and we always do get questions about lawns. So are we in a bit of purgatory at the moment with lawns, or is there anything specific to this time of year we need to be doing? Obviously, it's going to be very wet for the next while.
Yes, pretty much. I would say at this stage, just kind of cut your lawn when you can, as much as anything else, whenever it is dry enough. A lot of people go out, you'd be tempted if it's looking scruffy, go out and you know in your heart it's too wet. And a lot of the time the lawnmower, you're tramping it and everything else. Well, you're not actually doing any good, if you know what I mean. So pretty much let it dry out a bit, cut it when you can. And if you have a lot of moss, you can still scarify. Pretty much through this month, you can still scarify to remove the moss. And going forward into the winter, as the leaves start to come down, clear it'd be them. A good idea just to keep them clear, because it sort of prevents moss for next year.
There is no rule of thumb when your last cut is there? I mean, it's going to depend on the weather over the next wee while, but also growth, the condition of your lawn, etc.
Yes, exactly. You can get growth right up into October, like on into almost Halloween. So if you get to that stage, just probably leave the blades a wee bit higher.
Well, do you like to leave a bit of grass on the lawn over the winter?
I would leave a fair wee bit, you know. Yeah. So would
that doesn't promote dampness, though?
It's sort of 6 of 1, to be honest. Sometimes if you cut it too short, it can be more susceptible to frost and stuff. Yeah. If you know what I mean. Okay. So I would tend to leave it a wee bit long, not too long.
The one thing I always found with the grass is that even if it looks rough, you know, the start of next year or heading to the spring, a few cuts in, it normally bounces back.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, because after the first cut, it always looks kind of scalped, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Or patchy, because some parts grew longer than others, if you know what I mean.
Planting lawns now.
Yep,
people are doing that now, are they?
Yes, September's perfect time because you get.
What's the logic for that again? You don't want it to be. There's a logic. Why it seems illogical, but it's
basically to get the job done. It's harder to get the soil leveled because it's just wetter, basically. Yeah. But summertime grass struggles to germinate because it's just too dry. So now this time of year you should have the perfect level of moisture.
Yeah,
and a lot of times you sow out new lawn, you see a lot of weeds come up with it. Just naturally come out of the soil, then called red shanks especially comes up, but doesn't happen as much in September because it's just kind of too cold.
It's not very natural time.
The grass will germinate, but the red shanks won't, so you have a cleaner looking job.
I remember the excitement of what it was, a field that it wasn't really a lawn, it was a field though, but the soil was quite good and you know, got it flattened, and it was so exciting seeing the
it was
just rushes beforehand for like 15 years, and just to see this grass coming through.
You can see the wee green haze almost in the first few days.
Like, such a lovely thing. Gregory, one of the best flowers to plant for honeybees in Donegal is Borage. It replenishes its nectar continuously, so gives them a continuous nectar supply while it is in bloom. True or false?
100% true. So it is. Borage is a brilliant plant. So it is. It's a herb, actually, but it's a Mediterranean plant, has been about for a long time. Like, brilliant plant, self-seeds, and actually produces a huge amount of seed. So, like, say you had a big banking or something to cover, start it off at one side and it eventually will go across. And it's a good seed for trading, if you know what I mean, because a lot of people, it produces so much seed, a lot of people would pass them on to you and stuff like that. So, I remember another thing about it, there was, they used to give it to Roman soldiers before battles for courage.
Okay.
So they did, so put it in through wine, so I know there's some sort of effects like that.
All right, brilliant. Well. Oh, I had your tomatoes, by the way.
Oh, did
delicious,
you?
Yeah, and far more, I did share those. Mm-hmm. You could really tell the difference between the shop-bought ones.
Yes, no.
And the shop-bought ones are lovely, don't get me wrong, but you could actually tell there was...
yes, now the homegrown.
Yeah. Definitely. Just in case you think you bring things in and they're disregarded. Yes, no, it was lovely. I did pick two of the nicest ones.
Right, very good.
They didn't
last
a day at home. They were straight down the swallow. They're fruit, really, if the truth be told.
Yes, sir.
Aren't they?
Yeah, they've seeds inside, so that's what makes them a fruit.
All right. Ask Paul, now that it's time to empty the old flower pots, does he recommend putting in completely new soil, or is it okay to have save some of the old stuff? Thank you kindly. We kind of talked about this last time, Graham, but no harm reiterating.
Yes, generally it goes with the size of the pot. If it's quite a large pot, I would leave a third behind.
Mm.
But if it's quite a small pot, I would replace the whole thing. Just to do, like I say, you want your flowers to perform well, so plenty of nutrition.
What percentage of the pot would you put a bit of gravel or stone into the bottom of?
Generally, maybe up to 20%.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
But once again, depends on the size of the pot.
Yeah, yeah, But 20% is going to be the same no matter the size.
Once you get to a certain...
And I left school at 14. Yeah,
but now,
I know what you mean.
Once you get to a certain sort of... Not a very big pot.
Yeah,
I would tend to leave out the gravel, especially if the drainage holes are quite big.
Of course. I put too much poultry manure pellets around the bottom of my cherry blossom tree, and the leaves have turned brown. It's burnt the roots, I'm told. How do we revive it?
It'd be
Is that possible?
It's possible, but it'd be rare. You'd need to use quite a lot to actually really sort of poison a plant almost. In terms of a remedy, what happens there is too much nitrogen hitting the plant at once can actually draw the moisture out of the roots. So, and that's what's causing it to turn brown. So remove the excess, if there's still sort of poultry manure visible, remove the excess, but really drench the area in water. It'll both wash away sort of the remnants and it'll actually rehydrate the roots.
You'll get the benefit.
And the cherry tree, sort of, this time of year, is going to be sort of losing out anyway, like losing the leaves. So it is. So if it's losing the leaves at this stage, you would be hopeful that it will regenerate next year.
I'm in studio with Paul McLaughlin of Ballacdur Garden Centre. Quick question, or take as much time as you like, Huey. Sorry, that's an awful way to introduce you. Good morning. What's your question for Paul, Huey?
I was just asking about planting a little hedge, and this is the best time now. It's just only a little shrubs. I cut off another hedge. I'm just planting them. So how's it going now? Is that the best time?
Yes, now's a perfect time to do it, actually. Well, like a lot of things, you have plenty of moisture going about. There's still a bit of heat in the soil, so now's a perfect time. Do you know what type of hedge it is?
It's a broadleaf one, but a lovely green one, like a broadleaf. It's just a funny name on it, right?
It's probably the Grisellinia or the Laurel, I would say. But,
Well, I thought Escalonia, not...
Yeah. No, that's perfect. Yeah. Yeah,
it's just only little slips I just took off this other haze,
perfectly. You can actually if you take bits about the length of a pencil round that there, strip off some of the bottom leaves. You get in the garden centre that you can buy a thing called rooting powder. You just put a tiny wee bit in the end of the plant, and either stick them into pots or just stick them directly into the ground where you want the hedge to grow. And the key there would be to do like, say you want 50 plants. Put in like 150 slips, if you know what I mean, because you'll growing slips like that, you'll never get 100%, but you should get a good lock of them, you know.
Okay, yeah.
Right.
Okay, yes, lovely. Thanks very much.
Good luck with the hedge, Huey. Thank you so very much indeed. All right, and it's always nice if you can put your questions directly to Paul. Don't worry about that. Are robot mowers good for the lawn?
Yes, I would say robot mowers, they seem to be quite good. I think it was actually McHale's in the last time I was chatting. My brother now has put a robot mower on half of his lawn. He's like two sides of the driveway. So one side
so
is a robot.
So he's half a lazy git.
Pretty much. Yeah. Oh, no. He's 100% lazy git. So yes. But he's just got half of it for a mower.
Right, okay.
So, but no, in terms of, I've been watching it over the course of the year. And in fairness, like it's not a pristine lawn by any means, but the side with the robot actually does seem to be performing better than the side that he cuts normally with the lawnmower.
And there's different versions of it. You can get ones where you run a line around the area that you want, or you get others that are GPS controlled.
You map out your garden.
Yeah, so right. I mean, they're not a bad option.
No, they're not absolutely. Once again, if you have the sort of the area to justify it, maybe if I live like down the town there, and my garden wouldn't be big enough, I'd say, to justify.
But that's
one.
All the more reason to get one.
Quite possibly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Can you imagine it just constantly being done?
I just turn about.
I like the idea of it being cool. I never figure out how people use the robot vacuums.
Yes.
Because our house, it wouldn't be able to get into everywhere it needs to go, but obviously they must be very popular.
They seem to be all right. Yeah. So they do now, but that's you'd have to be running about lifting stuff out of its way.
That's what it feels like, or finishing the job, which that defeats the purpose.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
For me, I have a hydrangea. It's green at the bottom. The top is all red and the leaves seem to be hanging. There are two flowers on it. What could be wrong?
What could be wrong? Possibly, once you get, maybe water could be a problem. Maybe it's just struggling a bit for water. Or see the way the leaves are sort of damaged at the top and the bottom seems to be okay.
Yeah.
Like the plant's trying to fight back almost. So maybe it was earlier on in the year. Maybe it struggled for water for a while. But we bit of nutrition now. Once again, your poultry manure, that sort of stuff would be perfect. And a bit of that on now. Whenever the time comes and the flowers are off it, hydrangea actually benefits from being cut back.
Yeah.
So there's two schools of thought. Some people do it in the autumn, some people do it early in the spring. But give it a good cutting back, maybe reduce it by about half. And next year it should be perfect again.
Is now a good time to spray knotweed?
Now is a good time to spray knotweed, yes. It would be probably a wee bit earlier. Sort of, I think the prime time, sort of late July, August. But now at this stage, knotweed's a perennial plant, which means it dies back for the winter. And a lot of people reckon by spraying it now, it's dying back. So actually the chemical goes down into it better, sort of gets drawn down into it better. So
because it will be eating, or it gets its nutrition from the dead plants, so yes, you're bringing it down with it.
Yeah, well, exactly.
There's a bit of logic to that, isn't
but
there?
I think maybe ideally a few weeks ago, but now someone's better than nothing.
If it's okay, is it okay to put sulfite of iron on my lawn now, or is it too late? And what fertilizer would be recommended for overwintering the lawn to minimize moss growth next year? Thank you.
Yes, sulfite of iron, it's probably a wee bit late. The sulfate iron is the thing you see in lawns that turns the lawns black.
Mm.
It sort of burns out the moss that way. If you put it on now, it might be a wee bit late in the sense that the growth might be sufficient to actually cover it and cover up the black for the winter. You could end up with the black lawn for the winter, which is not ideal, if you know what I mean. So I would maybe just give it a nice scarifier without the sulfate of iron, which will reduce the crop a lot. And generally, you get autumn feeds there, fertiliser-wise, they'll be higher in potash. They feed the roots of the lawn over the winter, whereas the nitrogen one feeds the green part of the lawn, which is not ideal for this time of year.
From someone with no green fingers, why does Paul suggest putting gravel in the bottom of the pots? The reason I thought it was for drainage, and I actually like the weight.
Yes,
because we're in a sort of exposed area.
Yes,
is that it?
Yeah, the drainage is the main issue.
Yeah,
like pots, if they don't have sufficient drainage, will flood and just to sit too.
And was it the dirt might compact? And
yes,
the water fills doesn't up escape. The holes. And, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so the gravel keeps the drainage holes open basically, and allows somewhere for the excess water to go.
Yeah,
and it also adds weight, like you say, to stop them blowing over.
When's the best time to plant a raspberry bush? I've also heard they spread a lot. Would it be risky to put it in a rented house?
Not particularly risky to put in a rented house. In terms of, raspberry bushes are, they grow sort of in canes, the traditional way they grow. Early spring, the time to do them sort of in early March would be perfect time to plant them. Raspberries, they can spread a bit, but generally you keep them cut back, and they're not actually a deep rooted plant, so if they're not hard to remove later on.
How do we get rid of moss off tar and cement? Now, there's a lot of products out there.
Yes, there are a lot of chemical products, all right. I see, actually, driving about the last few days, I've seen a lot of people use washing powder.
Yeah.
It's actually just...
And it doesn't have to be the best of the best,
no,
either.
They reckon actually the cheaper the better, nearly.
Yeah.
So it is. So a lot of people use that. Probably long-term preventative thing would be keep leaves off it, sort of keep...
Dry.
Debris, keep it dry as best you can.
I had awful problem with damp moss the back of the house, cut a few trees back.
Yes.
It was astonishing the difference it made.
The moss just loves sort of sheltered, damp areas, if you know what I mean. So if you can keep it dry, keep it like...
And I have to think too, if you have that up to the sides of your walls, what's the impact actually on the property itself? Like, it pays to sort of have an environment that doesn't encourage the growth of moss, I think. You know?
Yes.
I have a holly tree 15 foot high and it is in lovely shape, but it's blocking light. Can I trim it and can it grow back?
Yes, trimming hollies by all means. Certainly wouldn't advocate cutting them down because of the wee folk, basically.
The fairies?
Yes,
okay,
absolutely. But no, trimming would be perfect. I sort of, if you want to trim a tree like that, the key would be sort of little and often, if you know what I mean. Trim it back a bit, see how it looks, then trim it back another bit if necessary. But generally, you'll not do it any harm.
All right, I tried vinegar to kill weeds. It was a waste of time, but I want something natural to kill weeds. Any suggestions? Boiling water is one, is it?
Boiling water, actually, sort of natural. If it's in paved areas, that's salt.
Yeah.
Works quite well.
The
de-icing salt would work quite well. Vinegar on its own works all right, but it's very short-lived because it doesn't kill the root.
Right, okay.
But if you mix it with Epsom salt and it's very liquid, does do it a wee, it goes a wee bit stronger.
Gets a bit deeper on it, okay.
The other thing is key to that is check the actual acidity of your vinegar. Sometimes you can buy vinegar that's actually, it's quite weak. Whereas if you go to some of the wholesale places, you get stuff up 19-20%, which would be, it's more concentrated.
Chip shop vinegar.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yes. How do you overwinter dahlia tubers?
Dahlia tubers, you probably, they're still flowering now, should be flowering through the month of September. As they start dying back, eventually you'd cut the foliage off them as it died back.
I think some of us have maybe been a bit too quick to give up on the summer bedding plans, are we?
Yes, probably a bit all right there, but a day like that you can see why. So you can.
Exactly.
But the dahlias, eventually one of the times, right, you lift the tubers and sort of turn them upside down, a bit of dry compost and let them dry out for the winter.
Do you know anywhere I could get wild daisies?
Wild daisies, not particularly, I'm not sure about the legality of sort of lifting them, if you know, suppose if you had permission, because I don't think they're protected by any means.
Right, okay.
You know what I mean? But I take it they're probably chatting about the bigger growing daisies, like the ones that get up to maybe 2 foot high. But most garden centres carry them through the summer months.
I've been growing two varieties of pears in Donegal over 20 years, and they ripen perfectly every year. An orchard-picked pear is one of the best-tasting fruits, and it can be bought in a shop. I wonder, is that a reference in our last conversation about pears not ripening maybe necessarily as in our environment as they could?
Yes, quite possibly. All right, I suppose I can really speak to my own experience there, which I've always had bother ripening them, if you know
what I mean. Yeah, well, hey, keep doing what you're doing if you're getting them. If you're getting them. Is it too early or too late to feed chicken manure to hedging?
No, now would be a grand time because there's still plenty of growth there for the next month, so now would be a good time.
We answered this, I think. When's the best time to set cuttings from the hedge to create another hedge?
Now? Yeah, no. Okay. Any tip?
What could I plant to grow quick and create a 12-foot hedge? 12-foot in height or length? 12-foot hedge, that's a biggie.
12-foot hedge is quite a big one, all right. For speed there, once again, probably the dreaded Lalande, but
they're fantastic if you look after them.
Absolutely.
But they're a nightmare to look after.
The problem is, like 20, 30 years down the line, they can be very hard to hold back.
Yeah.
Pretty much. For any sort of hedging around here, I would always advocate Gristlinia.
Will that go to 12 feet?
Yes, it will grow to 12 feet. All right. Once again, it gets quite wide. You have to, any hedge, you're going to let go to 12 feet.
If it's going up, it's going to go out.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to sort of judging what
and then
space
you start sort of trying to make it more narrow, presumably it starts exposing
wooden bits and stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
So now Gristlinia will get there. Mightn't be as quick as Atlantic, but will get there.
All right, okay.
Easier managed.
Yeah, and it won't take your house over and your neighbour's house and the rest of the county. Right, Paul, thanks so very much indeed. Paul McLaughlin of Ballacdur Garden Centre, Ballacdur Letterkenny. Call in and chat to Paul and the team in the Garden Centre with any questions. Take pictures with you. They can even give you advice using Google Maps, satellite images and all that kind of stuff. And of course, we've fantastic garden centres right across the region as well. And they all generally are very glad to see you coming and answering your questions and helping you out. For now, Paul, thank you.
Thank you.
I look forward to planting my plants. I shall do that as soon as the weather breaks.
Very good. Excellent.
And I'll track it for next spring. All right, so we'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after a break. Okay, we're joined in studio now by Councillor Ali Farron, manager also of the Malin Head Community Centre. How are you, Ali?
Great.
Do you get dizzy when you travel this far down?
Yeah, it takes you over an hour, like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have to get a passport clearance or anything?
Nearly,
oh,
yeah.
That's okay. No ice cream cone in your hands today?
No ice cream today yet,
Okay. Right, thanks for joining us, because it's part of efforts underway to establish a community first responder team in the Malin area. Surprised there isn't one there yet, and we've seen the success and the importance of them elsewhere. So a brilliant project to try and get off the ground.
Well, I was asked basically by the district nurse if we could help to set up one for the Malin parish. Like you mentioned there, how long did it take me to get here? Like, if an ambulance has to leave Letterkenny to get to Malin Head today, or vice versa, you're talking probably an hour and a half. So the idea is that we're looking to set up a first responder group again. Now, there was one, there was a Red Cross, or there was a defibrillator group there before.
Yeah.
But COVID and one thing and another, it phased out. Mm. And it was a very stressful kind of a thing, because if you're the night that you were on, they handed you the phone and you hoped that the phone did not ring. And so the system now is slightly different. It's run by the Irish Ambulance Service, and it's more app based. And you, from what I can gather, we form a group that'll cover the whole parish of Malin, and that will then be able to link in with the likes of Bochum on one side, and then we have the Klemani first responders in North Innishowen. So, like, if we could get the group up and running, that they are in a position that they could save or try to save a life.
But they do, you see. That's what we find time and time again. I'm always, like, we've been involved, not involved, helped promote the establishment of first responding units right across the county.
Yeah.
And they normally come back maybe a year on. And it's astonishing the amount of times they've called to houses, even just actually to be there in the time of crisis, but delivering interventions that have saved lives or bought that time. They talk about that hour being critical. You talked about the distance between out in the Galvin or Letterkenny. They are on site to buy more time, you know, and they save lives. If this is established in the first year, there'll be lots of call-outs and lives will be saved. And also too, Ali, you know, the more people are involved in it, the more people are involved in it, the less there is pressure on.
That was the point I was trying to get at.
Yeah.
You know, like, we don't want it left to half a dozen people to look after the whole parish, and we would love to get 20 or 30 people. And it's a case, this system now is a case of if you are available to go. Mm-hmm. It's not that you have to be available to go. So that's what we want to, the more people you have, the better. And talking to people, some people are afraid, oh, it could be down to me to save somebody's life. But if they knew there was two or three people available in the same area to go and assist, that they could help together, would be far better.
And I've known situations on certain calls where, and no one's judged, some people don't go to certain things and do go to others. And I don't need to go to the ins and outs of that, but suffice to say there's movement there. And also too, in terms of training and coordination, there's help with that as well too, which I think is critical.
We know there is help, but again, we've got to do things for ourselves. You know, so Our next meeting is next Wednesday in Malin GAA, by the way, and we're basically looking for people to come along to see what it's going to entail first, and then hopefully sign up to the training and to developing the group further.
Listen, this has been replicated in many, many places. There is a system and it can get up and running really, really quickly. So if you want to get involved, maybe you were in some former shape of this in the area, or you want to get involved and help save a life, because invariably this group, once established, will save lives. Get yourself along to the Malin GEA Clubhouse next Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. So it is next Wednesday evening, the 17th. And the more, the merrier. There's probably a few stalwarts that will be there, right? And that's great, but you need a big crowd there to give everyone a role in the job.
To learn, you know. And you can't say, well, we didn't tell you. So the district nurse is going to be chairing the meeting, and she's going to be informed. There'll be a bit of an information evening, and hopefully we'll be able to set this group in motion and be more beneficial for the whole community.
Brilliant stuff. And we'll remind listeners, if I'm reminded, next Monday and Tuesday, just to ensure as best as possible there's a great turnout at Malin GA Clubhouse next Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Now, I wanted to ask you as well too about a recent meeting with Ishka Aaron. It's always good if you can get them in the same room. You pulled that one off. What's the takeaways from it? I mean, the water system in Innishowen is brutal. It's not exclusive to Innishowen, but in terms of outages, regular outages, the amount of time the water's out, the damage to showers, washing machines, the quality of the water as the water comes back on, it's like you fix one length and another breaks. You know, I mean, it's a big, big problem. Historical lack of investment in the water infrastructure. Ishgarin, do they recognise that?
Well, I think they do, and they're basically saying that this is something that they've inherited, and there's not enough. I think they're a few billion short in investment for the country, but you know, from our point of view as a councillor, we probably spend too much time dealing with it, and to me, Ishgarin, we're faceless. You know, we don't get to see them. Like, if you have a problem with somebody in the council, we can go and meet them. These people are faceless to us, so this was my second opportunity since being elected to get to sit with them and have a chat with them. The last time I done it online, and I just didn't feel you know, you need to be able to have make eye contact with
people. You see, the thing for me, Ali, is this. Whatever you inherited, that's fine. Let's draw a line under that. Okay, you get a pass. What are your plans, right? And then we can start pointing fingers at funding for that, right?
Yep.
So I would take Ishq Erin far more seriously if they say funding is tight, but these are our plans when we get funding available. And then councillors and TDs and radio stations and what have you then can start pressuring for more funding. Do you feel they recognise the issues in Inishowen, the obvious ones, right? And they have a plan to fix them, even if it's not funded yet?
I think they have taken on board some of our, like, staffing is one of the major issues at the moment in North Inishowen.
Mm.
And they were saying that they don't have enough people looking for jobs. So there's an opportunity for a lot of people here that might be interested in working for Ishq Erin, and probably quite good jobs. So it might be something that local people could look into.
Mm.
But we need to get people on, you know, in the area.
Yeah, in terms of what's coming up, they confirmed 3 kilometres of mains going into Clonmany.
Yeah, well, that was a major issue there over the summer as well. They're going to do that this year. And we had a network or piping that was left on site down around Malin Head that we always thought was going to be replaced, and they took the pipe away. So that now is back on the agenda for, I think, 2026. So I'm kind of delighted about that, because we can't tar the roads, Wild Atlantic Way, until that is done. So certain wee things, but, you know, some of it is, you know, it's the facelessness of it. Only for a few of the good lads that we've built up acquaintances with, that they'll answer the phone to you. Otherwise, we have to call. We're using call centres and things like that, and it's very frustrating, you know.
Yeah, Anne Francis messaged in here. We are Glenty's cardiac first responders registered. If you need any help or advice setting up, don't be afraid to contact us.
Thank you very much for that.
It's a nice one, isn't it? And I think, Anne, that's relatively recent, isn't it? A couple of years, and lives have certainly been saved.
We're very lucky in Inishowen. At the moment, we have Bun Crana, which they were a big team of them there down giving us advice the last day. We have Newton and Clemanny are very open and very helpful as well. So we'll be reaching out to them guys. Bakken now is coming on stream shortly, as is Muff, and hopefully soon
that Malin gap needs to be filled.
And then we'll probably need to look at getting Cairn sorted then.
Right. Thank you to Councillor Ali Farron for helping us with signs, for making people aware of the rip currents in Mobile, Greencastle and Glenburnie. We had a safe summer thanks to this effective signage from Liam O'Brien and all swimmers and water users. All right.
Nice.
Don't like reading positive messages out about councillors, but
we don't get many positive ones, so maybe we should embrace them, you know.
How many messages? So just in terms of, sorry to jump between a few, but that was the nature of the invite, right? You know, the residents and tourism all affected by poor water in Inishowen and elsewhere. I think really the message, the takeaway from this is great where positive things are happening. Fair play to local staff on the ground for digging out, perhaps when they don't need to have to. There are staff shortages. Maybe there's job opportunities for locals there. But also, I think it's very much in Ishq Erin's it's in their interest to have regular face-to-face meetings. We might not always like the outcome, right?
Or well, we asked for that today.
Let's meet, and at least then, you know, maybe you need us to back you a bit more. But if we're on the same page, we can progress things.
Well, there's meetings happening yesterday, and some of the comments coming out of that have been very negative. But I felt today, while there's a lot of negativity, you know, we have to see the positives, and we need them to listen to us too, because it's us that's getting it in the neck. It's not them that's getting it in the neck. So we did ask for them to meet us more often. Now they're saying that there's only 24 hours in a day, and they can only work so hard and one thing or another. But you know, locally, I think we should be able to meet local Ishq Erin reps more often.
Yeah, indeed. And we were talking a little earlier on too about the housing agency and their no showing at a lot of these DCB meetings as well. You know, I think the public will deserve respect, and I think the councillors deserve respect as well to try and make these meetings where they are scheduled and to try and schedule meetings where they're required. All right, Ali, listen, thank you very much for calling in. I do appreciate your time. All right, take care of yourself. That's Councillor Ali Farron there. We'll be back with more on the show after a quick break. Now, I was contacted by Fiona, who emailed as follows. Hi, Greg. I understand that a caller to the 9 till noon show yesterday had a query about the rubbish line beside the waterworks at Loch Salt. This was rubbish collected by the Northwest Walking and Mountaineering Club on their annual cleanup last Sunday. It had been arranged that the council would collect it from there during the week. Kind regards, Fiona. Yes, Fiona, we got to the bottom of that, and fair play to you and the team for that cleanup. And it kind of looked too organised for me to have been dumped in that fashion. So we did conclude that, fair play to you, but that rubbish had to be there in the first instance for you to go out and collect it. So we still need to sort things out in terms of our respect for our surrounds. Right. Now, Joanne Sweeney is author of the AI Playbook. She's also CEO of the Digital Training Institutes. Good morning to you, Joanne. How are you keeping? Joanne, beg your pardon.
Good morning, Greg. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on. Right, AI in the workplace. You're of the sense that this is all good news, right?
Well, listen, whether you think it's good news or bad news, it is the news that we all have to embrace. AI is here. It's mainstream, and most of your listeners, or many of your listeners, are probably using ChatGPT because they've got 800 million users across the world. But for sure, it's going to change workplaces and kind of make them unrecognizable. Obviously, some workplaces are going to be more impacted than others. And, you know, I'm going to put my hand up here. I'm a marketing and a communications professional. And, you know, some people might say, well, why would we hire Joanne anymore to write our comm strategy when actually ChatGPT could do it for us? So, yeah, we're entering into a new time. It's, people say that it's greater than the revolution of the internet itself.
What I found interesting, but not surprising, actually, in recent studies is that workers are more inclined, seemingly, to be availing of and using AI than businesses themselves. So, you know, the adaptation from businesses to use it in different ways seems to be lagging behind people in the workplace using it on the everyday.
Yeah, it's called shadow AI, which means that workers are using it without any policy or guidelines in place. And that's just because the technology moves so fast. We're curious. We're a smartphone generation and it's absolutely free. And if you're at work and you can ask ChatGPT to write an email for you, you know, to a disgruntled client or to your manager, and it kind of helps you get you out of a hole, then you're potentially going to do it. But from a business or an organization and an employer point of view, they probably don't have the policy. Maybe they're not investing in the enterprise version of those apps that kind of lock down settings and maintain privacy a bit better. So yeah, users can move before employers, and that's definitely the case right now.
And I think that what people struggle, you know, they open up ChatGTP or Gemini or Grok or whatever it might be, and, you know, they might create an image, they might play around with a bit of Photoshop, for want of a better word, and then that's it, right? The issue is how you use it, what you understand it can do, and that's beneficial, that you can trust it, you can lean on it. Do you need a paid service, not a paid service? You know, I think that's really where we're at now. It's there, it's established, it's not going to go away, seemingly. But I think people are struggling as to, well, how does it benefit me?
Yeah, and that's the first thing that you will. The first thing is you need a policy. How do we use it? Why do we use it? And what are we going to use it for? And it's called an AI use case. So, for example, you do research and your producers do research for your show every morning and in advance of that the day before. So you're going to be looking at what's trending in the news, who's saying what. Like overnight, the big story from the US is the shooting of Charlie Kirk. So obviously you'd be maybe using something like Perplexity to say, well, who's saying what? What is Donald Trump saying? What are both sides of the political fence saying?
It's what you input into that is so important, though, because if you were to use Grok, for an example, it draws from tweets. Okay, so you'd be getting the conspiracy theories, you'd be getting the left version, the right version, and some version whatsoever. So it's what you input into that is very useful in what the output is. I wouldn't use it in that way, but it's a very good example. Don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't trust the output on certain platforms, right? But if I tailored the input, I can have better control of the type of information I'm getting back in return. And then that's where the value is.
Yeah, they say garbage in, garbage out. So if you're putting garbage in, you'll get garbage out. And also we should use it where we have knowledge. So if I was putting something into, you know, ChatGPT about biochemistry, I'd have absolutely no idea whether what it's giving to me is truth or not. So we should be looking at AI plus me is better, but using it with good intent to improve what we already know. But certainly AI in the wrong hands is absolutely very dangerous. And remember, these models, they predict the next word. That's just what it is. It's probability, it's mathematics. So they're trained, it's a supercomputer brain trained on information that it's given. And yes, there's bias inherent. So depending on what it's been trained on, what information, so tweets from Grok, for example, then it's going to spit out bias. So you're in the world of journalism and in the public interest news and the arbiter of the truth. You know, you add AI on top of it and it can make things very complex for a consumer of content. But in the workplace, this is where you need to be very discerning and very critical in your thinking about how you're using it, because they can hallucinate, they can make things up, because the bot wants to make the human happy. They're described as sycophantic tools.
So in your book, right, you can't target every single business and every single application. So you're obviously, I presume, I haven't had sight of it yet, it's a framework that I imagine that's employable. So what are the basics of that then?
Yeah, it's targeted at communications and marketing professionals, because that's my profession. And then anyone who has to manage AI. So the framework is get a policy. What tools are we using? Why are we using them? Have we developed use cases? Are we paying for tools? Because obviously privacy is very important, because if anybody puts in sensitive, financial, confidential information, you're training the model. Mm-hmm. That's how they get trained. And then simply it's teaching how to communicate with bots. It's called prompting. So you can really cleverly tell the bot and ask the bot what to do by giving it specific information. And then the level beyond that is creating custom assistance. So, for example, when I was in Harvard in July doing AI and public policy, and one of the assignments we had to do was create a bot by the end of the week. So I created Polbot, which was a political communications assistant trained in a couple of my books, a couple of my training courses and books. And she was able to write press releases and do media briefings. So again, then you're customizing your assistant to what you want to do. You train it in your own knowledge and put those guardrails in place.
Yeah, and I think, which I'm quite excited about, whether that's sad or not too, is Google is soon going to be integrating Gemini into their smart speakers and stuff more generally. And then what will be interesting about that is, you know, with Assistant at the moment, you know, it spews out just Google searches or whatever. It's going to be interesting to see. I think that's going to be one of the first real examples of it being integrated into a smart home and your life, and what can it do in terms of appointments and schedules and that type of thing. So that's going to be the our end. Obviously, in business and other areas, you know, things are already well advanced in that regard. How did Polbot do? Do you still have a job?
Well, this is it. I mean, there were 74 of us on the course, right? And four of us got to present. And one of the professors said to me, he said, Joanne, so what value do you bring? Because you've just created something that can do what you do. And I said, well, you know, I would have scored her 75%. She still needed me to kind of go in and, you know, give some nuance and extra context. But Greg, I'm definitely of the belief that unless I kind of pulled up my socks and really leaned into this AI age, then I potentially could have been defunct and worthless.
No, I think you're all right. I'm still not fully convinced that we're not in an AI bubble. to be honest with you. I know that there are some very fantastic real-world applications, and I'm not a denier. I just wonder, could this be the 3D TV in every house? And that's why I'm excited about, you know, when Google integrates more. Is there going to be a broad use for this? I'm keeping an eye on, am I going to start shorting NVIDIA at this point? Do you know what I mean? Because it just feels to me like there's a lot of money going into this. There's a lot of big players. You know, it's like when we had two different types of video recorders. I just don't know where it's going to go. And I'm still not fully convinced there's not a bubble here that could pop. But that's not to say that certainly in business, it's there forever. It's going to be around forever. I don't know what your views are in relation to that.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of money being pumped into it. And actually, Anthropic was valued, I can't remember the exact number, but about, I don't know, $180 billion. Now, put that in perspective, that's more than airlines. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And you could say, well, that business is only two years old. How can it be valued more than an airline that's been around for 30? So that would speak to some sort of bubble. Also, MIT conducted some research recently, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and they found that 95% of investment in major AI projects did not return any investment. Mm. So there's a lot of hype at the moment. And I guess what I try and do in the book is ground people in what is AI, how should you be applying it, and how you can use AI for good.
For sure. So, and I believe the space that you're in is outside of any bubble because it's already there. And I think if you're not using it, in business, you are behind your competitors potentially.
You are. And actually, I met my older brothers recently and I said, guys, have you heard about ChatGPT? And they were like, no. And I downloaded it and you should have seen how they responded to it. So then they started dictating to me what I should put into it. And I said, get your own app. But yeah, it's quite mind blowing.
Okay. Brilliant stuff. And the book is targeted at the public and private sector professionals as well. Policymakers and legislators, again, another area you need to get ahead of that, but not exclusively to that cohort. You think there's others that might? And where can they get the book, Joanne?
Yeah, basically, I give it to 30 advanced readers, and one reader said, like, it's the Bible for AI literacy. You will understand AI if you read this book. No. It's available at AIMarketingPlaybook.ie, or from tomorrow you can get it on Amazon. But I definitely appeal to the Irish listeners to get it off AIMarketingPlaybook.ie.
Thanks so much, Joanne. Bye-bye. That's Joanne Sweeney, author of AI Playbook. Now, the 9 till noon show live tomorrow morning from the ATU in Letterkenny. It's part of the TBEX International Travel Content Summer, Content Creators Summit. There'll be the usual Friday panel, of course. We'll also have some live music. We're going to chat to presidential candidate Catherine Connolly, and we'll also hear from the TBEX organisers and some of those content creators who are attending the conference. It's going to be a really interesting show tomorrow. They all are, I think, but that one in particular, looking forward to it. But that's where we leave it. Thanks to Donna Marie Doherty and Shannon Wilkins, researching and producing the show.